So I think you got to get out there and try a whole bunch of different things. And probably the things you think you're going to get out of a project, you might be way off on that as well. So for us, we thought that we were going to learn more about the books, retain more information. We thought we'd get better at speaking and listening. All of those things we did get, but there were also the added benefits we weren't anticipating.
Hey, Fram. It's David Dubinsky here in New York City. Do you wish you could read more books? I know I do. My guest today is Adam Ashton. He is the host of the award-winning podcast, What You Will Learn. He and a co-host have been podcasting on books since June of 2016. We became friends through the podcasting fellowship in the summer of 2018. In this podcast, Adam talks about his journey from corporate life to experimenting on projects on the side, how this podcast, What You Will Learn, has evolved and grown, and just a lot of great nuggets here in terms of learning, creating, and also around podcasting. We also talk about some of his favorite books for people that have portfolio careers. Special question just for you. And a couple other really interesting gems around starting projects, how to start them, what to do with them, who to talk to them about. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Adam. Cool. So Adam, if we were to go to an event tonight, how do you typically introduce yourself?
Man, I've been listening to some of your episodes recently in preparation for this, and I knew this question was coming, and I was thinking, I don't know, I think I'd just go with Adam. I am hesitant to call myself a podcaster. I do tell people that I do a podcast, but I don't know, I just haven't got to that level of identity of the podcaster noun, I guess.
Despite hundreds of episodes and multiple shows.
Yeah. I don't know if I ever will, but maybe one day I can call myself a podcaster.
I consider you a podcaster, and I'm grateful that you are a podcaster and how we became friends and supporters and collaborators. And this is just another example of that. So I'm grateful for that.
Thanks so much, mate. Right back at you.
Cool. So maybe that's one way that we could get started. I know that you've worked on a couple different projects and big advocate of side hustles, and I'd love to just kind of hear a little bit of how you got started with What You Will Learn podcast and why you think, why you wanted to create that podcast.
For me, I had gone through, I guess, the traditional system. I went to school, I went to uni, I studied hard, I tried to get good grades. Tried being the operative word there, and then went to a job and started working my way up. But there was always the idea of wanting to do something a little more, something a little different, something of my own, something I had a bit more control over. And so I'd tried various businesses, or business is probably a stretch, different ideas that I tested out, different projects to varying degrees of success. One that worked very, very well, and others, many, many others that didn't work so well. And I think the podcast was just the next one of those, the next thing I wanted to try. And it was me and a mate. It was May, June 2016. We were reading a lot of books. We were listening to a lot of podcasts. And we thought, why don't we try and make our own?
Mm-hmm. And what I love about your podcast, and I'm a listener and I love the actual content, but also from a career perspective, is you're learning and then you're creating and kind of combining skills and interests and learning and stuff there. So that's really incredible.
I was thinking just today, actually, that for the podcast, What You Will Learn, we read a book each week and share the best bits of that book. And I was thinking, if I didn't do the podcast, how much would I be reading? Because now I'm reading 50, 60, probably a bit over 60 books per year, because some of them don't make the cut. But I was thinking, I don't know, I reckon I'd be down to 10 or 15. I think it would be too easy to think, I know reading's great, and I know that even now if the podcast stopped, I'd still be reading, but I feel like I wouldn't have that pressure, and it would be easy to let that slip. So it's good to have the podcast to force myself to continue reading and continue learning and continue checking out different new things.
So it wasn't intentional, but now that it's happened, So you think it's a good idea then, right? Is to try to create, call it forcing functions in ways that to help side hustles learning and growing. Any thoughts related to that for people that are kind of developing the portfolio career, so to speak?
Yeah, for me, definitely. I read nothing for 21, 22 years of my life. I read nothing except for the school books that you had to read. And then one year I decided I'm going to start reading. I think I probably read 10 books. And then the second year I read 30. And then that's when the podcast started. And that's when I went to 50 or 60 each year. So it was a real step up that forced me to read more. And I guess in conjunction with that was that using the books was an easier way to start the podcast, in that I guess one level is consuming content. The next level is curating content. So I guess we're going through and picking out the best stuff from other people. The top level, I think, is creating content. So coming up with brand new things and sharing our own ideas. I think if we jumped straight from reading books to try and creating our own things, it would have been too much of a jump. For us, it was an easy transition where we could sort of use it as a bit of a crutch to rely on the books, and the content was already there. We just had to sort of repackage it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Consuming, curating, and packaging. Okay. And the podcast has always been a side project for you, right? In addition to some other ones, right? And now it's, I know you mentioned it's not necessarily a part of your identity, so to speak, but it's really started to take its own life of its own to some extent. And I believe you're working on another project related to the podcast and stuff too. So any kind of thoughts on that is for people that are kind of developing side hustles and projects and kind of don't know where it can go, and but yet there's beauty to the evolution of projects.
Yeah, for us it was 3 years where it was strictly a hobby, and probably even a little over 3 years where it was literally nights and weekends. We both were working full time. We're both still working full time, and we do the podcast as a side project. And I think if you're starting a project just for the money, if the money is the number one and only reason you're doing the project, it's easy to give that project up when you don't make money. If the goal is to make money and after 2 weeks you've made $0, then you failed at your goal and it's easy to give up. For us, the project, we had so many other goals. One goal was reading more books. One goal was creating something of our own. One goal was learning a new skill, of the hard skill of how to make a podcast. One was the soft skill or the real skill of talking a little bit better, maybe chopping out some of the ums and ahs, maybe listening better to each other and then responding rather than just saying our own things. How do we respond better to somebody else's thoughts? There were all these different benefits that were stacking up. And way at the end of that list, way at the bottom was like, maybe someone will listen and maybe one day we can make some money out of it. So I think having the other goals that were much more intrinsic and much more internal, much more within our own control, that we're getting all of these benefits from it, meant that we could keep going without having to rely on it being the sole and only way that we made money.
Love that. Yeah. And then now you're working on a book related to the podcast?
Yeah. So 3 years, it was full hobby, as in like we're doing it every week. People were listening slowly, like not at first, but eventually people found it and started listening. And then we got to the point after 3 and a bit years where we had our first sponsor. And so that covered a lot of the costs of the podcast. And now we're like, okay, what else can we do? Because we don't just want to rely on sponsorship. We want to turn the podcast into a book. And I must admit, we've tried a couple of times and given up. But now this is attempt number 3, and we're going for it this time, that we've done a full first draft. And so the book we're doing is we're taking the best 100 books that we've done and giving a bit of an overview of each one, the best lessons from each one, and turning that into a book. And so I think that it's like another sub project, I guess. It's a side project to the side project, where we're thinking, okay, what else can we do? How else can we firstly strengthen, I guess, the ties between us and the current listeners? But also, I think a book is maybe more shareable than a podcast. Like a podcast is a little bit harder to share, whereas a book is like a physical thing someone can hold and show off to somebody else. So that's sort of, we're thinking well, it's really a test. Is a book one way to grow the podcast as well? So stay tuned.
Can't wait to read. So more than stay tuned. And are there any books that you recommend for people that are launching side hustles, or that you think are, you know, unique or particularly helpful for people that are developing a portfolio career?
Definitely. And one I read recently is a book called Range by David Epstein. I actually read it at the very, like, over the Christmas New Year period of 2019, 2020. And I read it again for a second time, like 5 weeks later. It was probably the closest I'd ever read a book twice in one hit. And I guess for this, the concept of the book is that specialization, going narrow and focused, is one path to success. But another path to success is going wide and going broad and bringing together a whole bunch of different ideas and specializing later in your career with the broad base. And I think that there's a whole bunch of specific ideas in there, but I guess for me especially, the main idea was a bit of a confirmation that this wild and wacky path that I've gone on, I jumped from, you know, from science at school to physiotherapy to commerce to working in finance to working in logistics to working in marketing with different businesses along the way and different side projects and different things I've tried, that maybe eventually one day it'll all come together and it all makes sense and it'll all work out in the long run. So I think there's that idea in the book that someone who is following a portfolio career, it's going to be tough along the way, that it feels like the people who have got the early head start, the people who have got a clear path, the people who have specialized and they're working their way up in a very specific field, you might look at them with a sense of, man, maybe I should just follow that path. But I think the ideas in Range say that later on, you're actually going to be able to catch up and overtake those people.
Do you think that's awesome? You've read it twice. Do you think that it's changed anything of... You know, how do you think that's changed the book project or anything else because of reading that book twice?
I think it's more the ideas that really confirm that, hey, this is the right path. And then the second part of it that has changed is, I guess, to strengthen that path, to think, okay, what else is out there? What are the different skills that I should be learning, or what are the different projects that I should be starting, or what are the different fields that I've only looked at with a glance that I should look at a bit more thoroughly. So I think it's the ideas that to even strengthen the idea that you should be going broad and trying different things. And, you know, I think I've gone pretty broad, but there's way broader that I could still go.
That sounds... I know you've had a sock subscription side project and some other quirky ones, I can imagine. So... Going even broader, keep going, I guess.
That's it. The one that actually worked the best was when I was in uni, that I started a tutoring/lecturing sort of a small business where I was teaching high school students maths. And I think it started similar to the ideas. Another book that I really liked is Anything You Want by Derek Sivers, which has a very different approach to business, where Derek talked about he was a musician, he was selling CDs in the 90s, he wanted a way to sell his music online, so he made a website with a buy now button. And then his other music friends asked him, hey, can you do that for me as well? And that's where his business started, that grew to $20 million when he sold it, just from a few people asking him to help out with what he was doing. So Walsmart never got to $20 million. It started in a similar way, where I was really good at maths and I sort of approached it from a different way, and was teaching people how to not just study for the test, but how to actually learn and understand it more, which was a big part in the book Range as well, how to actually learn, not just practicing the same formulas over and over, but how do you link the different ideas together to learn better and truly understand it for the long term, not just pass the test and then forget everything.
Can you maybe go deeper on that a little bit more? Of like, I guess for me, I think creating a podcast and continuing to keep going, I think, you know, this has been a learning by doing journey. But sometimes with side projects, you kind of start, or other parts of your career and other work you do, you kind of start and you have a taste of it and you kind of think that you know everything.
Mm,
but or you don't get enough exposure to all that. So
have you heard of the Dunning-Kruger effect?
No.
So the Dunning-Kruger effect, you know the book The Dip. It's a similar shape to that dip, but even more extreme. So where it goes, it spikes way up at the start, and then there's a big drop off, and then eventually you work it out. So the Dunning-Kruger effect is, I guess, the amount that you actually know versus the amount that you think you know. So at the very start, when you start to learn something, your actual knowledge is quite low, but your perceived knowledge spikes up massively high. So when you start something, you think, this is awesome, I'm really good at this, I know everything. But then the more you start to learn and uncover, the more you realize that actually you don't know anything. And it, like, your perceived level of understanding drops off a cliff. So I was thinking about how that, obviously it applies a lot to learning maths, but also it applies to podcasting, where our first interviews, I thought, man, we're awesome at this. We'd done two or three, we'd interviewed some cool people, and our perceived ability to interview someone was massive. But it was after we started doing a few more and a few more that it, like, dropped off a cliff, that actually we had no idea what the hell we were doing, and there was a long road ahead of us.
Now there's a lot of pressure on me here, Adam.
Oh, mate, I even think now that listening to some other people that have gone through the podcast fellowship that we did together, and listening to their interviews and listening to your interviews, that I feel like I'm getting worse and worse at interviewing, more because I'm seeing all the good people like yourself around me that are doing it better, that I've still got a lot to learn.
Hardly, but very, very generous and kind of you, Adam. But what do you think has been some of those lessons learned from, you know, I guess, if you were to start a podcast now, how do you think you would change?
Well, the way we started it, and I think the way I would suggest, well, the way we started it and the way I suggest that anybody starts any new project is to make it, I guess, small and easy and achievable at first. If you think it has to be perfect, it's going to be easy to not do it. For us, starting the podcast and starting many of the projects I've done starts as easy as possible. For us, it was literally hit record, talk for 20 minutes, hit stop, and then upload and publish. That was our first episode. It took us, besides reading the book, it probably took us 22, 23 minutes. 20 of those were recording, and then two or three to upload it. Now, our system is way different. Now, 4 years on, we're reading the book, and then we're doing, one person will do 2 hours of notes, the other person will do like an hour and a half of re-editing and restructuring the notes, the first person will come back to do another hour, then we'll sit together and talk for an hour, then we'll record for 2 hours, then we'll edit for another 2 hours. And so there's so much more work that's going into it now, that if you said at the very start, your podcast is going to take you 15 hours a week to do, we'd say, no thanks. So at the very start, it has to be as easy as possible, almost so easy that you can't not do it. And then I think over time, once you get more and more committed, that's when you can start ramping up the time and the energy and the investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Love that. And it just becomes those 15 hours, it doesn't seem like 15 hours of hard work, probably, right?
No, we enjoyed it.
Okay. And then going back to some of the books, and you talked about range, and given that you also interviewed a bunch of authors and, you know, so intense in reading these books, what do you think is, you know, what would you say are some kind of lessons learned or some unique insights from this intense project that you've had? And, you know, how do you think some of your ideas about, you mentioned range, but any other ideas of, you know, how people's careers could change after reading these books and talking to these authors, any kind of revelations there?
I'll give a few specific book recommendations, and then a few, I guess, broader ideas. A few Seth Godin books, some we're both big fans of. The Dip, Poke the Box, Linchpin, I think are all good ones. Poke the Box and Linchpin, talking about taking initiative, trying new things, stepping out your comfort zone, being a little different, taking responsibility. And then The Dip, specifically about starting projects and realizing what type of path is ahead of you. I think the some of the lessons that we've learned is that taking on this long project, it was initially going to be 10 episodes, and very quickly it's turned into 4 years and there's no end in sight, is that you don't really know what's going to work and what's not going to work before you try it. So I think you got to get out there and try a whole bunch of different things. And probably the things you think you're going to get out of a project, you might be way off on that as well. So for us, we thought that we were going to learn more about the books, retain more information. We thought we'd get better at speaking and listening. All of those things we did get, but there were also the added benefits we weren't anticipating. Like, I think a lot of confidence has come with knowing that we've read so many books and knowing that we've got so many ideas and realizing that we've been able to speak to 60 plus international best-selling authors, and knowing that every single week there's people listening to what we have to say. There was a lot of confidence that came with that. Also, I think we've got out of it the ability, or the, I guess, confidence again, but knowing that we can start something and see it through to fruition, rather than just starting something, it didn't work, quit, try something else, start it, quit, try something else. We've actually stuck at something and been able to really make something from it.
Yeah, it's really interesting to think about kind of projects continuing to go on while sometimes, you know, businesses start and then they fail, right? But if you have a long-lasting project and you're then getting compounding benefits from it, while, you know, if the business doesn't start to do well, then, you know, then that's not good for your career, you know, or that's not good for your confidence. But yet, if you have a project that just continues to keep on going and it's 10 years, like, that's got to be pretty tremendous.
I think it makes you definitely stand out as well compared to, I guess, one person who follows the traditional path and they work really hard and work their way up, and within the rules and within the guidelines, they've done everything asked of them and maybe a little bit more, and they've excelled. I guess compare that to someone who didn't know what the rules were. They didn't have the map in front of them. They were able to scrap it out and find their own way through, but then stick to it for that long, I think it's a completely different offering for me personally anyway. And I think for the right type of bosses, that's a great thing to have as well.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, you're clearly a role model for me for having a podcast for so long. So, and continuing to innovate and go deeper with your work. So, yeah, it's interesting. I never really thought about like a lifetime project.
I think it's scary to think about. And as I said, for us, it was a 10 episode project. And then probably after probably like the fourth or fifth episode, we're like, oh, I think we're going to just keep going. And then that's it. It's just an indefinite thing. There's no end in sight. But I think I suppose it's cool to think about. And the best thing is it's completely within your control. You can do with it whatever you like. If you're not enjoying it anymore, or if you're not getting the learnings out of it, or if you're not getting the benefits out of it, I guess you can stop whenever. But if you want to keep going, you can just keep going.
Just keep going. And on the kind of the managing projects while also working, how do you think you've been able to experiment with a bunch of different things while also working?
So I'm 26 now. I've gone through three, I guess, jobs along the way, jobs in the real world sense, where I, out of university, started a graduate program in a big corporate bank, and I was a horrendous employee. I think my view of it at the time was just like, okay, this is here, I'm making money, I'm doing what I'm meant to be doing in terms of heading out into the real world and getting a job, but I'm going to do the absolute bare minimum and fill all the rest of the time with side projects. I think that was probably the wrong way to go about it. I think most people are probably putting all their eggs into the corporate job basket, whereas I was putting all my eggs into the side project basket, and I really let the real job slip. Whereas now I think I'm a little bit more matured in that I realize there is a lot of benefit to the real world job as well. There's things you can learn from there. So I've been more balanced, I guess, in the real world versus the side project real world. So now I'm a little bit better in terms of my scheduling, but I think the real key is just making the decision that in the downtime. Everyone's got downtime. You're not working 24/7. So what do you fill that with? And I think I've chosen to fill that with the side projects, with reading books, with making podcasts, with writing books, and also Survivor. I love watching the TV show Survivor. So aside from Survivor, though, I don't watch too much other TV, and most of the other time is filled with side projects.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I do have one other story about managing the job versus the side projects, and it's less from a time management and more from a perception management of the job, that you really got to understand who you can and can't talk to this stuff about, because the book The War of Art talks about the resistance and that there's this force that holds us back from doing the things that we want to do, and it might manifest itself in procrastination. It might manifest itself in somebody else, like somebody else's comments that gets us down, or there's all these excuses that we put up from not doing things. And I think that I've found that it also manifests itself in other people in two ways. One, if the person in the past has tried some of these different side projects and failed and then they gave up, there's a lot of resistance there. And also the type of person that maybe wished they could or dreamt that they could or really wanted to but never actually took the leap. And then that the resistance mutates it in there as well. So I've had to be very careful with who I talk to this stuff about at work, because there was one day where I'd self-published my first ever book and I had to leave work early to get the delivery. I missed the delivery. I had to take the next day off work to get this delivery. I'd ordered a pallet of paperback books. I was getting 2,000 books delivered to my house. I should have just said I was sick, but I said I had to take the day off to get this delivery of books that I'd written. And the boss sounded happy and was like, "Oh, that's awesome! Bring a copy in, show everybody." And I made that mistake. I was too proud of myself that I actually did that, whereas I probably shouldn't have. But then I sensed a shift. There was a shift in the perception of me, and not in a good way. Whereas the environment I was in, it was a lot of older people. It was a pretty safe sort of environment. And they started to, I guess, raise an eyebrow or have a bit of a snicker or wonder what was going on. I later had a conversation with someone in HR. They thought that I was up to no good, or they thought I was doing something dodgy. And they said, "Are you like writing another book on work time or something like that?" I was like, "No. When I'm at work, I'm doing work. When I'm at home, that's when I'm doing the side projects." And they said, "Look, the boss said you're typing too fast and you seem to have too much energy. And if you just type slower, then everybody's going to be a lot happier." So it was it was bizarre. The recommendation was to, you know, do less work, be less efficient, be less productive, and then everybody's going to be happy. Because they thought that because I was typing faster than some of the older people who'd been around for a bit longer and had been doing the same thing for the last couple of decades, that meant that I couldn't have possibly been doing real work, that I was doing something else. So I thought that was a real eye-opener. And that's when I very quickly got out of that place, because it's just not the right type of place for me.
Yeah. Wow. That's a really good lesson, though, in terms of, you know, just in general, who you share, you know, your ideas, your stories with matters, and it can matter externally and also then internally too.
Yeah. I think you got to also, yeah, if you have a job, and you got to be careful with who you share it with, because if you share it with the wrong person who doesn't value this stuff, then they'll be thinking differently of you, whereas obviously the right person really respects that, but you need to really be careful. I think it's also like, who do you get feedback from as well? Who do you trust to give you valuable feedback? So probably at the start, when we were doing our podcast and we were sharing with our friends, and they'd say, "Oh yeah, we like it when you tell jokes, and we like it when you swear, and we like it when it's not too serious," which is, I suppose, some good elements to have, but they weren't necessarily the types of people who were going to be the longer term listeners. I suppose you got to be careful with friends or family that might think you're being a heretic, or that you're trying something different, and that you're going to leave them behind. So they'll throw shade, or they'll get you to change the way you're doing something. you're also going to be careful with any anonymous people online who have comments to say about you that you can't take their opinion seriously. I think you got to be find the trusted people whose opinions you respect, probably someone who's gone through what you're wanting to go through, who can give you the real advice that you're looking for.
Amazing. Yeah, spot on. This has been an incredible conversation, Adam. I'm really grateful for this conversation, all the other ones that we've had. Please let listeners know where they can follow up and support.
If you listen to this podcast, then search up What You Will Learn. Hopefully you'll be able to find our podcast as well. whatyouwilllearn.com/top50, T-O-P-5-0. That's where we've got a free download for our favorite 50 books that we've read. We call it our top 50 best books of all time, which is a lofty title, I guess, less so of all time, but definitely of the ones that we've read. We haven't read all the books yet, but the top 50 is a document we put together that highlights the best books.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Adam. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, mate. Great to chat, and look forward to speaking more soon.
Hey, friend. Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Wanted to also let you know about my monthly newsletter called One Email Away, where I fundamentally believe that we are all one email away from new opportunities. And if there's a way that I could potentially help you to connect with other people, I would love to do that. So One Email Away, you can sign up for my newsletter on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. You can also see the One Email Away section, but just want to take this moment to say thank you for listening to this episode. Really excited for us to build and grow our portfolio careers together.